Backseat Producers, episode 182, The Godfather. Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Tony.
And this is David.
And Daryl may or may not show up.
I showed up on time.
You did.
Even beforehand.
Truth.
But mostly I just wanted to drive the convertible. So.
Yeah, I came downstairs and opened the door because I was like, oh, the guys are going to be here in a few minutes. I looked outside and it's like, well, there's the convertible. But what?
Yeah.
There's nobody in it. But I see you walking up the path.
I was watching Deuce work out.
That's what I was doing.
That's sexy.
Yeah. That open-throated shirt he's got on.
That's right.
All right, so we're here to talk about Godfather this week. Next week, we're going to have special guests, T. Morris and Pip Ballantyne, talking about their new book. But before we get started...
It's going to be weird when I make weird sexual comments about her.
Now that they're dating?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But good news. It's going to be weird for T and not me.
Not you, yeah. I was just going to say, it's not really going to be weird for you at all. That's kind of par for the course.
Life.
I was going to say, that's kind of par for the course for you.
Yeah.
All right, so, well.
After that, we're doing Godfather 2.
Yeah, we're going to do Godfather 2, and who knows after that?
Godfather 2, The Rise of the
Silver Surfer. How about Godfather 3?
No.
Just riding the wave, Tony. Just riding
nope.
the wave.
We are not going to do Godfather 3, by the way.
About Sam the Woman. It's like Godfather 3, except he has a college student for a weekend.
That's weird.
And he's blind.
All right, so we actually do have a voicemail from last episode.
Sweet!
Referencing last episode.
Oh, what did we talk about last week?
Superman.
The Five. Oh yeah, Superman. Bum, bum,
bum. When it eventually loads.
Hey, Tony, it's Art here. Just got done listening to the Superman episode, and one quick little quibble. Superman is not a Jesus figure. He was written by two Jews, so that makes him a messianic figure. The difference being that you look at Jesus from a Christian point of view, he was the Messiah to us. But from a Jewish point of view, they're still waiting for the Messiah. He's a Messiah figure. As far as you mentioned Star Wars, A New Hope being the best, you're right. I agree 100%.
Boom.
And thank you for now giving me a nice argument to use against people who say the Empire is the best. And last but not least, say hi to Nipples Pania for me. That guy always makes me laugh, and out of all the names you gave him, that one was the best. All right, fine.
All right, to be fair, I did not give him those names. Those all came courtesy of the great Mr. Chibi, David Bednar. So I can't claim any of those names. Those all came from him.
I think my favorite part of that voicemail is that he did not lambast me for ruining the episode. That's my favorite part.
To be fair, that could have happened.
I was half expecting. Like, I started reading the transcript, and I'm like, oh, that's way off, but that could be it. Let's roll these dice.
No, I think all of his comments were fair.
Yep.
All right, so, Godfather.
Nipples, what'd you think?
I read the book several years. I actually read the book on my honeymoon. By the way, that is the most compelling argument against premarital sex. Like, you get to the honeymoon, you're like, yeah, we could bang, but we've already been doing that. So... I guess
what's the point?
I guess I'll read The Godfather. So, it was the book, and I really enjoyed the book. So,
did you enjoy the movie then?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Okay. Yeah. All
right, so Deuce is left.
Remember when Deuce made us come out here on time?
Hi, this is Tony.
No, don't start over.
No, we're not starting over. No, we had a
unplugging
incident. In. Yeah,
so, now you're up. Go.
So, yeah, I really enjoy the movie. The dog is howling, so I'm not sure what that means. He could be announcing that Daryl has arrived. I'm not real sure.
It's too early.
It is. It is still a little early. Yeah, I own the restoration, the Coppola restoration version of the movie. It's still on DVD. It's not the Blu-ray. But they went through and they realized that the film was deteriorating, so they cleaned it all up.
It's the most bizarre episode ever.
Man.
Wait till Daryl shows up.
Alright, what did you think?
Did you like it? I didn't get your...
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I loved the book.
Okay.
And then the movie is really just the book.
I like the movie. I think it still holds up very well. I don't think it's the best gangster movie ever made. Because I have other movies that I think fulfill that role. And I know it's always widely credited as being the greatest gangster, if not the greatest movie ever made. But it's a great movie. It's not the best gangster film ever made.
No. Yeah. I think at the time it was probably way up there, though.
It was.
I think there have been movies that have come out after it that have surpassed it in many ways.
I mean, I would say I think what The Godfather did that is unique is that it gave everyone a language. Like, the language that people use in gangster movies is, I think, its unique contribution. I think as far as pound for pound, the pace of a film and its level of entertainment, I think there were a lot of 30s gangster films that were just as good.
I'm not as big on some of the older gangster movies, but I think from the movies that I've seen about gangsters, it's been one of the few that really approaches the family of it instead of the acts of the gang.
Yeah, because
it's about the family. It's about right. Vito Corleone. Mostly, it's about Vito and Michael.
Right.
I mean, they are the leads that go throughout the series.
And it's definitely about the structure of how the organization is and the politics of it and what's important to them and what their motivations are. Whereas I think a lot of maybe gangster movies before that were just, oh, I'm a guy, now I got into the gang, now I'm moving up in the gang. And
really, one of my favorite aspects of this story in particular is the deconstruction of a man in power.
Yeah.
Because really, up until I think this story, like a lot of the tropes of a man in power was just somebody who was either physically impressive or had a lot of weapons. And the Don was not that. But even in the first few scenes where he's in his office, it is obvious that man is in charge.
Yes. Right? There is no question who is running the show. Period.
Right.
And
every aspect of it.
From him is just impressive, even though Marlon Brando when he was last was reading off cue cards.
Yeah, it's interesting, because he does bring gravitas to the role, and he won an Academy Award for that role, and he didn't even show up to get his Academy Award, because he didn't care, and that's often cited as the greatest performance ever. The whole thing is interesting with him.
I think what's great is it showed how, in some aspects, he was a family man, but that always seems secondary to his role as the Don.
Yeah, except maybe for him, he didn't think there was a difference.
No, you're right. For him, he saw them as one in the same.
Just the size of the family changed.
But, right, his family wasn't just the children he had. The people who worked for him were as much his family as his children were, and he treated everyone equally.
Right. And his character is different from Al Pacino's character. I mean, Al Pacino's character is a much darker... I mean, not that there's, you know, legally any difference between two guys who kill people, but
right.
In terms of the motivations for the character, Michael Corleone is a much darker character than his father.
Oh, absolutely.
His father...
He was a
product.
We're getting a little bit. Yeah, we're getting a little bit into what happens in the second movie, but the arc of Michael through this movie, he goes from a point of he doesn't have to be in this life. In fact, he is the one who might be. Right. Yeah. He is the one who doesn't necessarily have to be in the life. But he's the one who makes the choice. He makes choices based on sometimes based on the situation, but he makes choices to further himself.
Yeah, and it's,
in the family.
It's an interesting conversion for him because, like, at the beginning, they're like, oh, well, you know, Michael, you don't have to get involved with this. It's better if you're not involved. And, like, you kind of get the sense, even though they tell you that he's a war hero, that he's kind of a pussy. But then, like, so as soon as he goes...
Yeah, I almost would like to have known more about what he did.
I think as well.
But, the
medals and stuff, you can piece it together.
Right.
There's a key scene where he describes to his girlfriend, who he never says he loves.
Yes.
Even when he's not in the family. Or not in the... But you know what I mean.
Right.
When he's not part of the organization. Where he says, pretty nonchalantly, my father said, this guy's brains or his signature would be on the contract. He made an offer he couldn't refuse. Then he says...
True story.
He's like, that's my family, that's not me. But he tells it in such a way where it's wholly indifferent to him.
I don't even know... He's impressed by his father's power in that moment.
Maybe.
I mean, I almost get that sense from him.
I don't know.
But it's more just a.
I don't know that he's impressed.
It's almost like a warning to her.
That he respects it.
Yes.
And that he understands it, and that he's comfortable with it. And then later, like the scene at the hospital where he comes in and he sees that everybody's gone, and he's like, "Oh shit, it's time to take charge." And then he wheels his dad into the room, and he's like, I'm going to take care of you.
Right.
And then he does.
Yeah,
he understands what he more clearly than either of his brothers, than I guess technically any of his brothers, because they kind of call Tom a brother also, but he understands leadership and is willing to accept that role. And not just to boss people around, which is kind of the sense you get out of Sonny.
I think that's why the war hero background, even if it's not expounded upon, is a good foundation. Because without that, I don't know if you would necessarily believe. I mean, I guess you could.
Yeah.
But it creates...
It's too drastic of a change in
that
element.
Yeah, if he's just a college student, you know, studying art history.
Yeah. I feel like he was studying bang.
Probably.
Sonny was.
Sonny was doing that, yeah.
Huge dome.
Which James Caan was really great in it. I mean, that was his second movie after Brian's Song.
Wow.
Which means that he
made
quite a leap,
he did.
In terms of, you know, doing what he could do. So, I could be wrong about that. I mean, I think Brian's Song was his first major film.
Went from
playing in 71,
Brian Piccolo to Sonny Corleone.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, he was great. John Cazale's great because he always plays...
Was that Fredo?
Yeah. He always plays characters that are basically losers.
Fredo pretty much was.
If John Cazale is a loser in your movie, there's a 50% chance you're going to win Best Picture. Because he's in, like, five of those movies.
Wow.
And he's really good at that, too.
So we kind of been bouncing around some of the actors. What did you think of the acting overall?
I had no problem with anybody.
Yeah.
I think the acting is... Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. No, I was just going to say, for the performances in this movie, you would have stood out if you weren't performing well. And there really weren't any standouts, I don't think. I think everyone was solid in the roles they had.
I think that
it was well cast.
Yeah, not everybody who was cast in the movie is who they are now. So you just got to look at it from the perspective that
not Abe Vigoda,
fish.
You got to look at the perspective that you know, it's probably one of the greatest cast assemblies ever made, in the sense that they decided these people were going to be in these roles. I mean, obviously the bankroll for this cast today would be insane.
Oh,
you know?
Good God.
So it just tells you who they were.
But these guys were, for the most part, there was a couple of stars in the cast. But there
was
some that were
Brando
still...
Brando was a big
Well, yeah,
star.
Brando was big.
I don't think that any of the other ones were, really.
I mean, there were some that probably had...
Some Lucas Coppola, American Zoetrope stuff,
mm-hmm.
but that wasn't any breakout stuff for him. Nobody knew who Duvall was
no.
as a result.
Bobby D.
You know, D wasn't in it yet. He's in the next one.
Oh, Bobby, Robert Duvall,
oh.
Bobby D.
The other Bobby D is the in the
Bobby
second
D.
one.
Right. I said that, but I'm like, oh god, Bobby D just litigated that dude. And we're just like, what are you talking about? I'm like, that's Robert Duvall. No, it's not. I'm like, oh, come on.
Yes, it is.
I'm like, look, there's James Caan. Who's that? All right, let's just
let's just watch the movie.
Al Pacino. No, it's not.
Yeah, Marlon Brando, Al Pacino, Diane Keaton, John Cazale, Robert Duvall. Who was the other? Oh,
Abe Vigoda.
James Caan. Abe Vigoda. So that's pretty strong cast, especially rounding out at the end there.
Yeah, and what I like is, all right. So talking a little bit about the movie itself, I like how the beginning, the wedding, from start to finish, the wedding sets up so much of what happens in the movie. Establishes Vito as the Godfather. I mean, it explains. They do a really good job of explaining why that's happening. And they explain how powerful he is and how much respect he commands, but also that it's not just respect in you will bow down before me.
Right, it's not like that.
It's more you... The one guy comes and asks him for a favor, and he says, hey, when was the last time you invited me over? You know, when did you give me that respect? You know, you're coming asking for things, and you know you're going to get them. But consider that this is not a one-way street. You know, you can do nice things for me. I'm a human.
Yeah.
I am a person. I would react to that, and I liked that it wasn't just this on high presence
yeah,
that he
I think
had.
That opening monologue sets the tone of the movie, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
That there is a lot of power being shoved around this board, and that there's a very human element to who wields that power.
Mm-hmm.
Except for when Michael becomes together, because then there's not as much.
Well, it shows. I mean, the first scene with Vito and the last scene with Vito show humanity. They're very human moments. He's giving favors on his daughter's wedding day, and then he's playing with his grandson when he dies, which is not
kind
the way
of
you expect.
Encapsulates him as a family person,
right?
Indistinguishable from the Don.
Right.
You know. Yeah, whereas my...
And these are things that... He has more power to give things as the Don, but he would still be doing something similar to this if he were just...
An
Italian businessman, or, you know, just a man at his daughter's... His wedding, on her wedding day.
I agree.
Good. We're all in agreement this week. It's a good thing.
Well, it's hard to disagree about The Godfather. It's hard. I mean, it's a great movie.
Well, it's a great movie, but I'm not sure that, like, its place within cinema history is...
Overstated?
Yes.
I agree.
I think Godfather's is. I think Godfather 2 is less overstated. And Daryl has joined us. Go ahead and we've started. We had to start on time tonight, we're deep into the discussion. What'd you think of the movie?
It had been a long time since I'd seen it, and I forgot how really great it was. Just got finished watching it just a half an hour ago. A lot slower pacing than I thought. I remember it. A lot of scenes I had forgotten, but overall, I really enjoyed the chess game that was played during this movie.
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement.
You brought up the time on that, so it did not feel like 3 hours.
No,
it's a long movie, but it doesn't feel like 3 hours.
You're spellbound the entire time. You can't take your eyes off what's going on.
Yeah, I was writing a paper and I did not write the paper. Instead, I watched the movie.
that's a win.
I was measuring drywall,
sort of,
and I didn't really do a very good job with that.
Gonna be a lot of taping on that one.
Well, I went out. I mean, I haven't even put it up yet. I just was measuring it to make my purchases, and I was like, I kept forgetting the numbers. I was like, now what did I say this wall was? What did I say? Because I'm watching the movie and I'm just like blowing off every time I measure it. I'm like, oh wait, he said you're out, Tom. Oh, that's cold. Oh, wait. What are the numbers?
So
that's my
story. So, I forgot where I was. Because I looked and there was a problem with
the
part
of the recording. You were saying that the first one's place in the pantheon of film is overstated. And a lot of it, I think, has to do with the fact that it's arguably Brando's signature performance, and Brando is kind of the crown jewel of actors, so method acting and all that good stuff. So I think that has a lot to do with it. I mean, because of who he is.
There are a lot of people that also place this movie on a high pedestal in like the quotes for it and what they draw from that. I mean, you know, geeks have this tendency to quote like Star Wars, but mm-hmm. there's a larger section of just men of a certain age who can quote the Godfather.
Yeah.
And do so.
Yeah. No, it's... Yeah.
I mean, I even threw out on Facebook earlier this evening, hey, we're talking about The Godfather this evening. What's your favorite lines from him? Because you know there are some that will come up.
That I cannot do.
That's probably my favorite.
My favorite is leave the gun, take the cannolis.
That's a good one, too.
Of course, you know, I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse. Right. He made him an offer he couldn't refuse. That line comes up a couple of times.
It does go back to the idea that the way people perceive gangsters and things like that all goes back to the language and how they talk and this stuff, you know, how many Italian mobsters have we seen them talk like this all the time when they're talking? You know, like,
right? Exactly.
I mean, and it all goes back to that,
to this movie.
Yeah.
Right.
So I mean, it really does kind of define, in a way, the modern genre, at least.
Right.
You know. So.
I mean, to the point that Brando even parodied himself
in The Freshman.
In The Freshman.
That's a good movie.
Yeah. It's been a long time since I've seen that one.
Yeah, me too. I like that one.
That's where he's babysitting an alligator. Is that
something like that?
It's been a long time since I've seen that one.
that's a good movie though. It's like you analyze this. It's like, you know, basically taking a movie and flipping it around, mm-hmm. doing the same movie except with a comedy angle. So that's pretty good. So I agree. I think it's overstated.
Overstated in what way? The film itself, or
it's not the greatest film in history.
No. Well, that would be a bit of a reach, but that's right up there.
That is, I don't know. That is, I'm not going to say that is a common belief, but that is a very strong.
I think it's a great movie.
It's interchangeable.
I can't say that it's that's
generally
one of the greatest
with.
Movies.
I mean, it's no Watchmen. I mean, let's be honest.
Agreed.
I am not having this discussion again this week.
I'll take that as defeat.
Well, I mean, if I had to say what's the greatest movie of all time, we all know what I'm going to say. I don't want anyone to get drunk tonight, so I'll quit. I won't say Rage.
By the way, I saw that in my instant queue, and I'm like, I should watch this and then just talk about this tonight. But then I was like, no, I'm going to do that.
But Casablanca, Citizen Kane, we talk about Casablanca.
We haven't released that episode yet. That one we're just kind of...
Oh, okay.
It's in our back pocket.
Okay. Gone with the Wind and maybe Lawrence of Arabia. These are the films that I think people talk about as
well,
like
that's,
the best
because
films of all time.
Yeah, major epics.
Well, and this one wasn't groundbreaking the way some of those other movies were.
Mm-hmm. I think it was in some ways, but not as much as people think.
But not in any kind of technical...
No.
Ways or even any. There, I mean, the story is not even
telling. It was
groundbreaking
in the fact of its subject matter and its depiction of an ethnic group. Let's put it this way.
Yeah, but there wasn't anything groundbreaking insofar as the storytelling or the effects. The way some of those other movies are considered groundbreaking.
Right, because of either technical merits or in the method of story. But
right.
You can still be a good movie nonetheless.
Oh, I think it's a great movie.
I mean, at the time...
I don't think anybody here at the table is arguing it's not a great movie.
Well, I think the thing...
But I think you're right. I think there are some people that do elevate it higher than it should be.
Yeah, Paul and I were talking about this earlier, and he thinks that the reason that people adore this movie so much is that it's immersive. Like, the level... It is an uncommon level of investment and immersion in a movie. Like, as soon as you sit down, you are in the world.
Right.
Well, right, the they wedding, set you up the whole time.
When Sonny's killed, you're pissed.
Plus, they... It's done in such a way that you admire some of the characters.
You root for the bad guy.
Yeah.
It really goes back to just how great of a story the Puzo story is.
You kind of wish you could be part of this family.
Yeah, exactly. You wish you could be part of the family. You root for the bad guy. At the end, when his wife comes in and he's like, "Don't ask me about my business."
You're like, "All right, yeah." This slam the door in her face.
Yeah, exactly. And then he's like,
"You just go away.
One time, you can ask me about my business. Did you do all those horrible things?" No. And they're like, "Yes, sir. That is the way it's done."
Yep.
I mean, this will probably end up being something else everyone can start drinking to, because I keep bringing him up. But I think the Godfather movie kind of recalls things that people forgot that Cagney always did. Like, so many of Cagney's movies are, that guy's just a horrible, horrible man. And yet you're transfixed by the fact that he's a horrible, horrible man. And he's doing things like...
But he does it in
dragging
such...
ladies down the hall and, you know, all kinds of things that...
Who's Cagney?
James Cagney?
James Cagney.
The gangster.
The original gangster. Yeah, the original gangster.
I'm right here, dude.
Huh?
I'm the OG.
I know. I don't say your name in his presence.
Well, so. I think another thing that's so compelling about the family and the Don and just everyone there is they do have a set of rules that they stick to. I mean, they are men who do bad things, but when their sister gets roughed up,
To be fair, yeah. I mean, Sonny's really just looking for an excuse to beat everybody up all the time.
Well, yeah,
I mean,
that's just
well, he's a hothead nonetheless.
Yeah, he is.
How'd that work out for him? Not very well.
That did not work out well.
Well, that's part of the
moral
whole
lesson
story,
of the
though.
Podcast, everyone.
That's right.
Don't be a hothead.
Measure your actions.
You can be part of a legal crime family, but don't be a hothead.
No, the point of the lesson to be learned is you don't go anywhere without your boys.
Yeah.
Not that I really think that would have mattered, because an additional three guys against like the 20 or so that they had at the tour.
Well, I hang out with the original OG, so I don't have to worry about that.
Well, that's true. I hear when he walks, earthquake happens on the other side of the world.
Yeah. That's pretty true.
Japan was him taking a leak.
Yep.
Ooh.
But yeah, I mean, I think that's the Godfather does a lot of great things, but I think it's things that kind of people forgot that movies could do, and then Godfather brought all that back.
Well, and then it does, I mean, you see the family, and then you see some rather shocking things, like the negotiation with the Hollywood guy.
Yeah.
So it's pretty straightforward negotiation. Yeah, you're going to do this for us. No, I'm not. Screw you. You know.
He's Mo Green.
Oh, Mo Green, dude. The dude was asking for it.
He's Mo Green, man. You don't mess with Mo Green.
Oh. So. Yeah, I mean, he ends up with a horse head in his bed.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're talking about that guy. You're not talking about...
No, I'm not talking about Mo Green. Weiss.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Weiss.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, when he goes out and negotiates with Weiss, it's like, hey, you're going to put this guy in your movie. No, I'm not. You can tell your guinea boss, no, I'm not.
And he made it clear why.
Yeah.
It was over a woman.
It was over a woman.
Yeah, and so
he did something stupid.
And then Tom was like... Something to the effect of, thank you for the lovely meal, I enjoyed my time with you, or something.
Yeah.
Like, no, you didn't. But that's okay.
Tom was just being polite.
Yeah.
That's the way Tom was.
Tom is probably my favorite character in the movie.
Tom is a great character in the movie.
I really like his character.
I like how Tom was so fully invested in the family, and willing to do anything,
yeah.
But in a smart way. He was the guy who really backed up the Don. I mean, he was conciliary. He was the guy who counseled the Don. And it wasn't Sonny, it wasn't Fredo, who were part of the organization.
They're the muscle.
Yeah, well,
he was the brains.
Fredo was the runt of the litter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean that was obvious from everything. But Sonny, we need to watch Sonny. Sonny's.
I don't think Sonny would have been a good Don.
No, Sonny would have been a bad Don.
Sonny was an action man.
Right.
The problem was too much of an action man.
And
he was all tactical and no strategy.
What I love about Don is that so they set up pretty early on. Oh, hey. He's really adopted. And so the obvious plot hook there is, well, I'm not really part of this family.
Right.
And they never go there.
No, he is part of the family.
I appreciate that they never go there.
Michael makes it clear in his conversation with his girlfriend. He's not Sicilian, but we consider him part of the family. Then later, when it's like, I'm sorry, you're not conciliary anymore. And it's not even in a gentle way. It's, you're out, Tom. He doesn't even care.
I don't think it's he doesn't care. I think it's because he loves him.
He does care. He's trying to get him out of the line of fire.
Genuinely, really?
Yeah. Yes. What I thought is, he says to him, there are things that are going to happen that I want you not to be a part of for a reason. And he kind of just pushes him off to the side to get him out of the line of fire.
And he doesn't need a conciliary anymore because he's got his dad.
Father, yeah.
Well, he says he needs a wartime conciliary.
Well, yeah.
And I don't know if that is a real distinction. Maybe it is.
I think it is.
Because Marlon Brando's like,
because
I don't think you were a bad wartime conciliary. I think Sonny was a bad Don, and that's why things went so bad.
I honestly think, I mean, from the way things were playing out, I think Vito's plan was to get the family
out.
He was the one that got the family in. He created the family. He was the Don. And he needed a good way to get the family out.
Right.
He wasn't grooming an heir.
Right.
I mean, if you look at it, there was no heir to the throne. His plan was that he had 10, 20 more years in him, and he was just going to gracefully end it. And that's what he was using Tom for. Tom's role was to facilitate that.
Yeah, legitimacy. Right. Well, and he also says it to Michael at some point. We hope that you would be Senator Colleoni or a judge or something else. You know, first one out of this family to get some into legitimate society where you're not always kind of working in the shadows.
That's an interesting point to me because I was just reading about the Bulger family. And Bulger is the character that Jack Nicholson in The Departed is based off of.
Mm-hmm.
And his brother's a senator.
Really?
Or was a senator. I don't know if he's still a senator. He was a senator from Massachusetts. At the same time, Whitey Bulger was the most wanted man in America.
That's interesting.
You know, running one of these big crime families. So when I heard that line in the movie, I was like, oh my gosh. You know, like that's how close that line can be between, you know.
I'm afraid if you
it's
look
all power.
At,
yeah.
If you look
yeah,
at any exactly. any family that's got any sort of power, you're going to find some rather dark roots.
Well, and they always talk about it how Vito has all the politicians and the cops in his pocket and all this stuff, and why don't you share with the rest of our families, etc.
And that's why, you know? And that's why everyone's gunning for the Corleone family because
right.
they have the political
they have the
cover.
Power.
Yeah,
they're the ones that can walk the streets free and clear and not worry about it until something shakes it up, which was the Don getting shot.
Well, what really shook it up was the fact that he didn't want to get into something that they all wanted to get into, which was the narcotics. That's why he turned him down. That's where they took it as an insult. Okay, you don't want to do this. You're throwing it back at us.
And see, when I was younger and I watched the movie, I saw that as they didn't. That was another one of their moral lines that they wouldn't cross. And now that I watch it and pay more attention to certain scenes, because quite frankly, some of those times that I watched when I was younger, I was watching it on television,
right.
where many things were cut out of the movie. There was
right.
a lot that was cut out of the movie,
right?
Mostly for time because it's a long movie, but the idea was never that they didn't want to get into drugs. It was the situation which they were presented to get into the drugs was questionable. And it was a setup. And that's why they didn't do it, because they were being set up by that. Why do you need our money to get into this? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, we don't need your money, we need your political cover.
Right. That's
and that was mean. It. But it was also a way to set them up for a big fall. I mean, if you look at who was putting those pieces in place, there was the potential there that it could have done bad things for the Corleone family. Because at one, when you would have gotten into the drugs, they had the potential of the federal government getting involved.
Right.
Well, and some of that's a little unspoken, but I think it's there.
Well, Corleone says that in the meeting with the five families, that it would bring more attention to them than they wanted.
Right.
And he knew that it was not going to, you know, no matter how much political cover he had, it would just draw the attention of higher and higher powers. It's one thing to control the local cops, but when you're talking about trying to control the feds,
well,
that's a whole different ballgame.
Plus, if you really look at, they were trying, if they were trying to get the family out, to deeply embed them in mm-hmm. in the drug trade at that point, when it was really starting, would have been too much. They would have been too far.
They would have been sunk in too.
They wouldn't have been able to get out as easily as they were planning on it.
Yeah.
Well, one other thing I might want to bring up. This movie is also kind of a neat study in just the old maxim of how power corrupts. I mean, we start out with Don Corleone. He's controlling. He's this puppet master out there that's kind of doing his little game. And as soon as the stakes get raised, and Michael comes in, he's finding himself pulled deeper and deeper into something he don't want to do. But he starts to enjoy the power.
I don't know. I cannot disagree with this more. I don't think that he's drawn into anything, like, unintentionally. I think that situations arise, and he has a choice where he's like, I can turn my back on the situation
and walk away,
or I can step into this
and be part of the family.
Right. That man, and then he does.
I think he sees it as a necessity thing. I think he sees it as the best way to help his family, and then obviously he has to go away for 2 years, so it's not like he's going to be in a position of power, because once he kills the cop, he has to go away. I mean, that's all there is to it. And they even fear for his life in Sicily. In fact, his wife gets killed over.
I always see the assassination of Apollonia as one of the things that was probably one of his break points.
Yeah,
where he was like, you know what,
yeah.
It's on.
Well,
it's always
if you look at it, every time that he makes a drastic move, it is always in response to someone close to him getting injured or killed.
Yes.
Yeah.
His dad's. His dad is shot in the street, and he doesn't even do anything. He just goes to see him, but then when he realizes they're coming to kill him, then he moves into action.
And I would definitely agree with the Apollonia point, because you don't really see him have any kind of emotional reaction of any kind.
Yeah, he's fine with the whole situation.
What I mean is like...
Oh, after she's killed?
He doesn't break down, he doesn't... Yeah.
Well, he doesn't have any emotions about anything at all. Like,
right.
He falls in love with her, he smiles and they say, oh, she's a good wife, and, you know, he has, like... I mean, bad things happen to him, but he's still in some ways human. But after they take her away, it almost becomes like... Even when he's, like, talking to Diane Keaton, he's like, I need you, I want you to marry me. I think he still doesn't say that he loves her. He just says, I need you in my life.
They sum it all up. I need you.
Yeah.
I need you.
He's looking for a balance.
Yeah.
He's looking for a point of balance, and I think he sees this innocent, and that's, he's trying to keep one foot in the real world with her, and that's what he saw in Apollonia also, because she was so far removed from everything.
But I think he just fell in love with her. I mean, he never loved Diane Keaton's character ever.
Yeah.
He wouldn't say it. And
well,
then he goes
he
over
didn't.
There and he falls in love with her.
That's
and
true.
Marries her right away. And
there is a span of time for when he comes back. Like, even after he's back.
Yeah, how long have you been back? 2 years.
Well, he said a year.
Yeah. Something like that, yeah.
Well, he said a year.
A year? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he had been back for a while. And the one thing about this movie is there are times, and I think one of the flaws in this movie is sometimes the time period in this movie is a little bit nebulous. Not the time period,
that
but,
could also
but the
be
time
line,
the flow, the timeline. What appears to be a couple of days or a week, you find out is years, and there's not a good explanation of that.
But by not choosing to frame those situations, they may have been going for the immersiveness that everyone, you know what I mean?
So yeah, there's not a concrete jump where it says, now it's 1955.
Right.
You know?
Right, you draw it from the context of the cars, the clothes, the...
Right.
And whatnot. Because by the time he's going to Vegas, we're starting to see that as the early 60s.
Yeah, because that's after Vito's death.
Because
Vito dies in 55.
Well, it's...
But they don't ever say it.
The Vegas thing is not the 60s yet.
No,
because
it's before.
The second movie deals with the Cuban Revolution, which is in the late 50s.
Yeah.
So it's probably in the 50s, but it's probably early to mid-50s. And then after that,
well,
is the second movie deals with the 50s and 60s.
And the only reason I know this is because I actually looked at the Wikipedia page for something, I don't remember what, on Vito. Because I can't even remember what I was looking up. But it actually gave his birth
timeline,
and death.
Okay.
And he died in 55, according to that.
Okay.
So, which that could have been referenced in the book. It's been a long time since I've read the book.
Yeah.
A long time.
I remember having read the book, but I don't remember that much about it. I read it when I was like 17.
Sonny's Huge Dong?
I don't remember that.
It's like the first 10 pages.
I think the only thing I remember is that the end of 2 in the movie is different than the end of the book.
I think I don't even remember that. So.
So
it's been too long since I've seen it.
Yeah, good movie. I got a roll. You guys can keep talking about it, and me after I'm gone.
All right,
done.
Do.
Bye bye.
See you guys.
See ya. You guys got anything else?
Nope.
I might want to open up a door on one thing too. This movie kind of opened up a door, but it made other movies of this type a lot more acceptable. Everything may have been compared against it, but there were many imitators of this style.
Yeah, I think there, you know, a lot. Of course, he just leaves when we get to this. I think a lot of what Scorsese did can be attributed to the success of the Godfather movies.
Well, yeah.
You know, you have you know, movies like
Goodfellas,
the whole series, The Sopranos, you know, owes a great debt because that is about a man who's in charge of the family, who is a family man.
Right.
You know, it's another way of telling a very similar story.
Similar story, but still a lot of differences in that because it more or less focuses on one man himself and his relationship, where the Godfather movie focuses on all of them. Although the story may be centered around Michael to somewhat and Don Corleone, but it was the beginning of this sort of.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Because up to that time, you know, the gangster movie or the mafia movie was all figured around just the focal point of just one charismatic character.
Yeah, it was the gangster movie. This was a family. This was about a family.
Right.
About a family. I was about to say a family movie.
It's not that kind of family.
It is not a family movie.
Well, it is in a way. It's all about preserving the family.
Yes. Yeah.
Whatever the cost. It means that even if that means removing a few dead branches, which they did quite a bit of pruning on this family tree.
Yeah, I liked one of my favorite things about the movie in general and the story is the theme of consequence. There is consequence for everything, and everyone has a motivation if you look deep enough. There are motivations, and not everything is what it seems. And I think Michael's greatest strength is that he doesn't let outward action... He doesn't just stop at outward action. It goes... He always takes it that next level. He always looks
for... one thing about Michael,
motivation
too,
behind that.
One thing about Michael, too, is he's a strategic thinker. He's always looking about two or three steps ahead of all of this competition. Whereas most of the other crime family members, their focus is on, okay, we're going to get into the drug trade, let's get rid of the Corleones because they're the biggest impediment. Well, the Corleones knew all that was going on around them, and they're working ahead once the initial shock is worn off that they're at war with the other families. They're strategically thinking, okay, how are we going to maneuver our way around to destroy all of them?
Michael never underestimates anyone.
Mm-hmm.
at no point does he underestimate anyone. Everyone else underestimated the sister's husband. I can't remember his name. Because they just thought he was knocking her around. Mm-hmm. And that's what Sonny did. Sonny went after him. And Michael was like, that doesn't make sense. You married into the Corleone family, and you're going to knock around my sister? That's dumb. Why would you do that? That makes no sense. Well, the reason you did that was to lure Sonny out. That's why you let her call. If you were really doing this, why would you have let her get away with calling? Why would you have been so flagrant about the affair?
It's to rev him up.
That wasn't dumb. Mm-hmm. That was calculated.
Strategic.
You calculated that. Congratulations, you killed Sonny. Blam. You know?
Well, no. He waited for the confirmation.
Yeah.
He baited him into confessing.
Well, yeah. He knew. He didn't underestimate it. He didn't think he was just stupid.
Is his name Carlo?
That sounds right.
Yes, it was Carlo.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And Italians in this movie, Daryl. I don't like Italians.
Hey. What? Sicilians.
Sicilians, Italians, same thing.
Back to Jersey Shore. No.
Go back to Mexico.
Godfather is the Jersey Shore of 1970s.
Oh, Jesus.
See Sonny walking around?
Sonny was awesome.
Sonny was great.
I'm never driving up to a toll booth that is that lonely looking ever.
Yeah. And when you see the toll attendant duck, you might want to floor it or duck yourself.
When the car in front of you stops and people start getting out,
floor it.
Move away. It's not like you're in a war or anything.
Right.
It's not like you're in any sort of danger.
Yeah, see, and that was the interesting thing, you know, watching it. If you watch how it goes down the first time, you're like, how in the hell did they catch him? What kind of sense does that make? Well, and then it does resolve. I mean, they do get the resolution of finding out that Carlo set it up, which I thought was brilliant on a couple ways. I mean, it was brilliant that they set it up and they forced Sonny out that way, but nobody just accepted the fact that Sonny was caught.
You'd think the guy who's, you know, the muscle and the right-hand man of the Don could be so easily upset that he'd forget all his basic security and just run off as a hot-headed...
What he was doing, and everyone, Michael even tells Carlo, he's like, everybody already blames you for Sonny's death. They just don't know that you actually planned it.
Right.
They just think that you're an idiot. I know.
But Michael's not convinced. Michael doesn't see anyone as an idiot.
Yeah, he doesn't take, like you say, things at face value.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the good thing. He is a strategic thinker. He's the guy who went to school. He's the guy who was in the army. He's the guy who's actually been in combat. So he's a little bit used to this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And he keeps his cool and he can keep his head in a crisis.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting is Michael is a much more efficient Don than Vito is.
Mm-hmm.
And they show that. Because the big mistake that starts the whole thing off is when Vito sends Luca Brasi to infiltrate. It's like, seriously, you're going to send the guy that everybody knows will bow down and kiss your ass in public to say, I'm unhappy with the Corleones, so...
Well, they found that a little hard to believe.
Yeah, anybody would have. And I think that was a big mistake on Vito's part. And arguably, that's the mistake that starts everything off.
Well, that's the thing is, the reason why Vito chooses Lubraca was he's his most trusted man. And that's why he chose... But that's the thing is, he tends to look at loyalty a lot more importantly than the obvious mistake of... Hold on, how plausible is that?
Right. And arguably, that was the mistake that sets everything in motion. Because at that point, then the other families know that Vito's onto them, so they're just going to take him out.
No, they're going to react anyway.
Because that's where they set up that his driver doesn't show up, and so you know his driver is the one that cues him into where they're going. So it's just him and Fredo. And Fredo's just worthless when it comes to... you know, everything going down, because Fredo sees it. Fredo sees everything going down. But comes out of the car, drops
his gun.
He's worthless.
Well, and that's just it. None of these guys have been living the easy life for a long time. None of them, the Corleone boys, is a real leg breaker. Except maybe for...
I would say Sonny.
Sonny. Well, Sonny is. Sonny's a street brawler, yeah.
Yeah, Sonny's a thug.
Yeah, that's all he is. But the others are more or less kind of a little soft. I mean, they may talk tough, but when they get down to...
I don't think there's anything soft about Tom Hagen.
No, I don't think
so
either.
Well, he's not... No, I say the Corleone boys, not Tom Hagen.
Well, I mean, they consider him...
Arguably, he's a brother. I mean,
right. And I don't think there's anything soft about Michael either.
No, I think it's just Fredo. And Fredo's the runner of the litter.
And Fredo sucks.
Yeah. And Fredo almost...
Because Michael just straight jack murders two dudes in the face.
Yeah.
I mean, literally murders two dudes in the face.
In public.
Yeah, in public.
And one of them's a cop.
Mm-hmm. But you got, again, goes back to again what he is about. He's a war vet. He's seen this sort of stuff. He's got a level head on him. He doesn't panic in a crisis.
He's efficient.
He's efficient. He's willing. He'll do what it takes to get the job done.
Yeah.
And he's willing to do it. That's why everybody's so surprised when he volunteers. All the others are sitting there posturing, and he says, "No, I'll do it. I'll do it."
Oh, yeah, we have a...
Forgot we had actually a chat room going, and Luke and Stingray, is it? I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I don't know what that means either.
So...
I think he's talking to compare me to Fredo.
Maybe.
You're listed as off the air, guys. Or
no,
something.
That wasn't half an hour ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was... I accidentally unplugged one of the jacks.
Jacks, okay. Minor technical difficulty.
So, yeah, I think that's about all I've got.
The same here.
Illusions, Michael. Yeah, I got tricks to bang.
I've got box offices to backseat.
I was over at my dad's house on Saturday, and he's like, I didn't submit my movies for this week. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about.
he's an active player.
He's like, did you? And I'm like, I have not ever submitted them once. I don't... even keep up on what movies come out when or what's out.
If you listened to the Friday episode, you would know, because we talk about it.
I do not.
I know. Because you're a jerk.
Kind of.
Yeah, so, by the way, it's been a while since we mentioned it. There's that other backseat box office thing we're doing. We have 20 people.
I do not remember ever having mentioned this on the air.
Wow.
Maybe you weren't there? I don't know.
I don't
maybe
think
we
it's
haven't
ever been mentioned.
It's all the same. Well... It's actually, there's a couple of different feeds, but like if you were subscribed to the old feed, then you still get those. But
oh yeah, PowerPress.
So we're doing the backseat box office thing. We got about 17 people aside from the hosts that participate.
Wow.
Weekly or every couple of weeks. Yeah, we got 20 people on the leaderboard now.
Woo.
It's a little bit extra work, but it's fun. We've got some good competition going. There are people that have average scores above the hosts, though I'm still the number one host. Boom! Stingray is coming up quickly, though.
I've heard that about him.
I can say one thing, the last thing about The Godfather. It is a hilariously popular movie, because I sure had a hell of a time trying to get a copy from the library. It was always checked out.
That's interesting.
Yes.
It's number in the top 10 movies of all time to see. It's always on the list.
And it's always more or less either on reserve or checked out.
Yeah, and
I got
spoiler.
It from Blockbuster, but down the house roof of my house that needs to close.
Spoiler. I don't think it's even that much of an argument. Godfather 2, I believe, is a better movie.
How is that a spoiler?
Because we're going to talk about that next
week.
Okay, not next week, week after.
Okay.
Spoiling the fact that I like it.
I had to shut my boss down today because he came in and he's like, oh, what movie are you guys talking about this week? Godfather. That's a great movie. And I'm like, yeah, it was all right. He's like, no, man, for its time, it was a great movie. And I'm like, ah! It's either a great movie or it was a great movie in the 70s. But one does not imply a relationship with the other.
I believe it's a great movie.
Yeah, so do I. But it's not a great movie for its time. Because what you're essentially saying by adding that clause in there is that it's no longer a good movie because that time has passed.
That makes sense.
That's what you're saying. Just be clear when you use a phrase that you understand what it means.
Scott Pilgrim was a great movie for its time.
Scott Pilgrim was a great movie.
For its time. Well, no, it really wasn't.
And you use the worst examples, by the way. Just because something is animated doesn't mean it's childish.
No, I did use a bad example. Yeah. Glee would have been a better example.
Glee?
Yeah, because you were talking about it to make to that music, that songs made it more palatable.
No. For Lion King, the songs are there to keep
kids
interested.
That was stupid. You were dumb.
No, I don't feel that way at all.
So did you see Thor?
Not yet, but I'm going to probably tomorrow or Friday.
We'll probably put that on the list.
I don't want to talk about that movie.
I don't understand you.
It wasn't good enough to talk about.
Mm. There wasn't much to talk about.
We're going to say...
I enjoyed the movie.
The visuals when they weren't on Earth were awesome. And then that's the end of the discussion.
The Asgard was stunning.
Asgard was pretty.
Asgard was awesome. I liked the concept of Asgard, the way they presented it, too.
Something that encapsulates what that entire movie to me it was is... So Anthony Hopkins gets in the full Odin armor... And then Thor, whoever played Thor, gets into his full armor. And then Anthony Hopkins looks at both of them in the armor, and he's like, "There's no need for lines." That is what that is the quote right there that sums up the entire movie for me. This movie has already shot itself.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun movie. I thought it was also a really good glimpse at a character that I didn't care about before.
Well, this was my... When I go to any comic book-based movie, my expectations are not too terribly high to start with.
Why is that in quotes?
Haven't. But this was my... It's not too terribly high to start with, so anytime I'm entertained, it's a win.
There have been... Let's put it this way. Marvel has a serious deficit in ground to cover... when it comes to the quality of DC comic book movies. Dark Knight and Batman Begins have set the bar for comic book movies.
I think DC is going to...
Brandon?
I don't think so.
Hope not.
I think DC might lose some ground with Green Lantern.
Probably, but... I mean, the bar is still set. Even when DC can't hit the bar... They've still got the best comic book movie out on the market ever.
Except
Watchmen, because I don't feel it's a comic book movie.
I don't see Dark Knight as a comic book movie.
I know, but Batman is
a comic book character, but yeah.
I know that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. He's transcended his medium.
Yeah, exactly. They've taken the character of Batman and they've removed the comic book from Batman and they've created a movie crafted around this character that is deep and layered and unlike anything any other comic book movie's ever gotten close to.
I would say X-Men 2 got pretty close.
No. Oh, no.
The one thing is about
X-Men 2 was good.
The Batman franchise is they're willing to abandon the comic book period. They have basically transcended that medium. They're no longer tied to... They don't longer carrying the baggage of it around.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Marvel, they love to not only carry it around, they throw it into the luggage compartment.
They got seven versions of every character, so it's not like...
Well, yeah.
So does DC.
Well,
yeah, I know.
Yeah, I mean, that's not even an argument. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, that's comic books, yeah.
But Marvel is more overt in this than most anything.
Well, Marvel is also building to something the way they're doing it. They're building to their Avengers movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's
been known for a long time.
Yeah, that's what the second Hulk movie, both Iron Man movies, Thor, Captain America, they're all building to the Avengers movie.
And I cannot tell you that I was excited about a single one of those.
I really loved Iron Man, the first one. I thought it was great.
Iron Man wasn't bad.
I thought the second Hulk movie was great, too.
I love the second Hulk movie.
I'm really looking forward to Captain America.
I'm not looking forward to Captain America.
I really dig the idea of going back to World War II with him and telling everything from that perspective. Yeah, I'm looking forward
to it. I'll have to be.
I'd like to see their interpretation of the Red Skull. That's
what I'm You've seen a flash in
I've
the
I've seen
trailer,
a flash, but I want to see how they interpret that character.
Yeah.
Because
did you stick around for the thing at the end?
Yeah, it was dumb.
It's set up for Captain America.
All of them have been set up for.
It's they each set up the next movie.
Yeah,
I won't say anything because you haven't seen it yet.
I know. I will shortly.
All right.
Yeah, I didn't know what the thing was. So I'm like, I don't care about this.
Yeah, that was for comic book writing. Yeah. It really was.
Well, I guess that pretty much wraps it up.
Yep.
So we'll see you next week.
Next week, special guest T and Pip, then
woo-hoo!
Godfather 2. All right, see ya.
Bye-bye.